series between the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. Okay, take it away.
On behalf of George Watson and myself, this is Fred Fowler bidding you all a good afternoon from Comiskey Park, the home of the White Sox in Chicago, to bring you the second game of the City Championship Series between the White Sox and the Cubs being played this afternoon in Comiskey Park. The game will not start for about 5 minutes, but we have time to tell you about the crowd in the stand and also to give you the lineups for the game to be played this afternoon. Looking out from the press box up here, we would say that there are approximately 15 to 18,000 fans in the stands, both in the upper deck and in the boxes below, and it's a bright, sunny day. The fielder's gloves are all out on the field down there, all ready for the players to go out, and they've already warmed up and have left the field with just the pitchers warming up down in the bullpen right now. So without more ado, we'll give you the lineup for the game to be played this afternoon. For the Cubs who come to bat first, Solan is going to play center field. Cabaretta, third base. Herman, second base. Demery, right field. Hack, third base. Hartnett, catching. Jurgis, shortstop. And Lon Warnke will do the pitching. For the White Sox, Radcliffe, left field. Rosenthal, center field. Hawk, right field. Venora, first base. Appling, shortstop. Hayes, second base. Dyke, third base. Sewell, catching. And Monty Stratton, pitching. The field announcer is just giving the lineup that we have just given you, and the fans are continuing to pour in. In fact, there's a goodly crowd that's already coming in. As we look out over the diamond here, oh, incidentally, the umpires are just coming in, the four umpires for this afternoon, and they are Stewart, Barr, McGowan, and Ormsby. Stewart is at first base, Barr is at third base, and Ormsby at the plate. Now taking out the balls and giving them to the catcher, or rather to the umpire Barr behind their umpire Ormsby, behind the plate, filling his pockets with them. And incidentally, we're going to tell you that the grandstand is sprinkled with a goodly supply of overcoats this afternoon. You know, did we say something about football starting? That's right, it's football season right now. The baseball season is practically over with just the City Series to wind up the season. And the overcoats are coming more into prominence with the mufflers showing up here and there. It's a very colorful crowd out in the stands this afternoon. There's a very mild, moderate, gentle wind blowing. In fact, I should say it was coming very gently from the west to southwest. West to southwest. Is that about right? Yeah, about southwest. George remarked. The breeze seems to be coming from the back of the box here, so it is blowing in a northeasterly direction, which will help if the ball gets above these stands in carrying it into that center field bleacher out there, which is about 440 feet. Yes, it's only been one ball ever hit in there. It'll have to be a little bit stronger wind than it is today to carry it really into it. Nonetheless, it is a perfect baseball day. It's one of those days that can be adapted to almost any sport, whether it's baseball, football, or whatever it happens to be. And there go the White Sox onto the field to take their position for the first half of the first inning. The White Sox all dressed in their white uniforms, and the visiting Cubs will be in their gray visitor's uniforms this afternoon. And now the game is just about to start, and so for the play-by-play for the first few innings, here he is, George Watson. All right, George.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're underway for the second game in the City Series between the Sox and the Cubs. Yesterday, of course, you know, White Sox came north to Wrigley Field and taught the Cubs a few lessons in baseball by the score of 5-1. Vernon Kennedy allowing only four hits in the entire ballgame, which was a crackerjack ballgame to watch. Radcliffe's home run was something to really get a kick out of. The boys romping home one after another. Our pitcher's warming up now. Marty Stratton pitching for the White Sox with Luke Sewell behind the plate, and the first man at bat is Augie Gillan. Marty Stratton, a tall stringer out there, taking the rosin bag. Down his cap, getting the sign from Luke Sewell, and the ball game is about to begin. Take it. On behind him. Get in the signal and take on it. This man go on. And here it is. The first pitch. And ball one. Pitch. And I foul up into the heat. Up and down just in front of us there. And is missed completely by all concerned. Strike one. And ball one. On Augie Gillan. Stretch and the pitch. And the foul takes one in the midst of deep two for strike two. Strike two and ball one on the hitter. Martin back again. Marty Stratton, all right-hander. Pitching to Augie Gillan, batting left-handed. And an underhand shoot, which develops into a ball. So it's two strikes, and ball two. Two and two. That one cut the inside corner of the plate, and Augie Gillan didn't like that. He just kind of stood there and watched it go by. So it's one out. Augie Gillan striking out. Watched that third one go by. Money just put a screwball twist on that, and it broke sharply over the inside corner of the plate. Which brings Phil Cavaletta to bat. And the pitch. And ball one. Ball one for Phil Cavaletta. Stretch. Cutting the inside corner of the plate for ball two. No out. Sorry, one out, rather. Sorry. Gillan struck out. One out, the first half of the first inning, and the pitch. A sharply hit ball down to the second baseman, and he is out for the second out. Ball was hit down to Jackie Hayes, but plenty of time to field it and get it over to Zeke Manoah. Which brings us Stanley Hank at bat, hitting right-handed. Two out.
Against the right-handed pitcher.
some of that good old dirt to rub on that bat. Mom rubbing up the ball. Get that horsehide a little loose on there so it can do a lot of twists and turns. Here she comes. Stretch and the pitch. And right over the heart of the plate for strike one. Strike one and ball one. Ball two. Cuts way out in the outside corner. Ball two, strike one. Grant lifts the hitter. Getting ready to pitch. There's the windup. And at beauty, right over the heart of the plate. Rather a slow ball. Had a very freaky curve. Seemed to kind of lob over it. Grant pitch stood by and just let it go. Strike two and ball two. Ball three. Ball three, strike two on River Redley. First man up in the shot part of the first inning. This should be the good one. And River Redley gets the ball. Radcliffe on first, brings up Larry Rosenthal, the center fielder. Rosenthal at bat, also batting left-handed. Radcliffe on first, and Warnicke getting rid of the pitch. Gets his sign from Gabby Hartnett. Boys all in position. Watching first base, and here's the pitch. Strike one. Strike one on Larry Rosenthal. That's just staying pretty close to first base. Ron's looking over there, keeping him pretty well to the bag. Now a little leadoff, watching him, the pitch, and he tries to bunt, let it stand out foul. So it's strike two on Larry Rosenthal. Boy, striking the ball around the infield. Back to Ron Warnicke. He's still working on that ball, trying to get that cover loosened up a little bit. The rosin bag steps up to the slab, gets the sign from Gabby Hartnett, and the stretch. And that was ball one. Ball one, and strike two on Rosenthal. Ripper Radcliffe on first base. The leadoff. Leave about 10 feet off the bag. And right straight through the box, a nice drop sink. And now he's held up at second. Throws a little wide. Holding Radcliffe at second. Rosenthal singles sharply right through Ron Warnicke. Went out into center field. So now Mr. Warnicke is in rather a hole. No out. The man on first and second. Which brings up Dick Venora, or rather, New Hawes. New Hawes at bat, man on first and second. Warnicke is in a hole now. Foul off to the left up in the second deck of the grandstand. Back one on New Hawes. Back one on New Hawes. Man on first and second. And strike one on the bat. Warnicke watching first and second pretty close now before he starts the pitch. And there's the pitch. And ball one. The infield playing in close now and figuring that Hawes might attempt a bunt. Ball one and strike one.
Ball two outside.
First in this instance happens to be a second strike lead off first and second. Warnicke getting rid of the pitch. And here it is. And he bunts right down to Warnicke. Warnicke throws the first. Over. Another run coming in. Comes in again. And you have the
third base. Well, if you feel it, and threw it way over the third baseman's head out in the left center. A two-base throw in.
broke sharply to the outside of the plate, about knee high. Boys playing in close now. Wanaka using the rosin bag quite frequently. And the pitch. And he...
Oh! A sharply hit ball down to Billy Herman at second, and it developed into a two-bagger. That ball took a nasty hop. It turned right off of Billy Herman's...
That ball would be called a hit. A ball that it looked like Billy could feel, but it took a sharp bounce off his shoe, and it's called a hit. And Lou Kaplan closed up at second base. Ball bounded high right out into the right field. And another run in, so it's 3-0 for the Sox. All short and third base on that two-bagger. Which brings us to bat Jackie Hayes. One ball. Jackie Hayes, the hitter. And he, now, that's a little ground to down that went foul out into the third base coaching box. Ball one and strike one on Jackie Hayes. And one out. One out and three runs in for the White Sox. Warnke getting a sign. And the pitch. Lou Kaplan taking quite a lead off second base. Ball two and strike one. He stands up at the plate very much like Lou Kaplan, about the same stance. And strike two. Ball had a funny hop. Jackie Hayes took a wild swing at it and missed it a mile. Ball two, strike two on Jackie Hayes. Lou Kaplan on second base, one out. And the score is 3-0 for the White Sox. Here's the pitch. Gabby Hartman's calling him for the umpire. He got that ball, his right hand went up. But it so happened it was ball three. Ball three and strike two on Jackie Hayes. Kaplan taking quite a lead off second. And here is the pitch. Gets a hold of one. It's a high fly out into center field. He's got the run for it. Center fielder came in for that. Augie Galan came in for it, but Billy Herman went back and took it just about midway between the second base and the center field bleachers. So it's two outs. Jackie Hayes flied out to Billy Herman, and manager Jimmy Dykes is at bat. Score 3-0 for the White Sox. And two outs. Lou Kaplan still on second base. Jimmy Dykes at bat. Strike one on Jimmy. Right over the heart of the plate, about letter high. Still the second half of the first inning. Strike two on Jimmy Dykes. Two out. Happening on second. Strikes at bat. And two strikes on manager Jim. And he struck out. Went down swinging. That ends the first half, or the last half of the first inning.
That's all. Ladies and gentlemen, there's some pass. Half. Two hits and one man left on base. And now, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday afternoon, we didn't have us, but this afternoon, it is our pleasure to bring to you that ace, that dean of sports announcers, the man amongst men, that outstanding man. Here he is, in the flesh himself, Hal Cotton.
Hey, can I get my head in his boots after all of that? That's all I want to know. Whoa, man. Hey, George, what kind of a system do you use down here?
Oh, just, you know.
You're terrific. This is another George. This is Watso. Gee, Watso. Oh, that's yours. I see. That's the caller system. Well, I see I've got a lot of competition. How'd things go yesterday here? I thought I was going to have a vacation. Here I am back at work again.
No golf.
Well, anyway, it's worth looking at, no matter what way you look at it. And going into the second inning, The Cubs are at bat. The White Sox leading 3-0, and we're bearing down with, let's see, who's at bat. Frank Demery, the first man up there. And Stratton starts to wind up the pitch. The first one throws, and it's a fastball inside across the weight for ball one. One ball called. That's just Watson sitting down in his usual quiet manner. And there's ball two. It's a fast one inside in which Demery had to twist away from it to keep from getting hit. Still picks it up, looks it over, and calls for another one, which umpire Arnsby tosses him, immediately throwing the other ball out of play. And Sewell stands there, rubs the old shine off, throws the ball back out to the pitcher. Stratton has it and also does a little rubbing up on his own hook back of the mound. It's 2-0, two balls and no strikes on Demery. First man bat to the Cubs in the first half of the second. And there's strike one. A beauty down the middle across the letters. Strike, let it go by without offering at it. And the count is two balls and one strike. 2-1. Here's the next one. A drive into left field. Radcliffe comes in nicely, though, and makes the catch for the first out in the second inning. The ball was well hit and curving a little bit toward the line, but Radcliffe came in. He was playing clear out to the wall and made the catch easily for the first out in the second inning. One out. And Stanley Hack, the Cubs third baseman, a left-handed hitter, tall, slim boy, steps up there to the plate. Hack at bat. And he takes the first one and slips by wide across the knees for ball one. One ball called. Throws again, and there's a ball inside and low. The count is 2-0. Two balls and no strike. Stratton goes back, uses the rosin bag, steps on the slab once more. Winds up and pitches a high ball outside for ball three. And it's 3-0 on Hack. Three balls and no strike. 3-0 to count with the pitcher waiting out there again. Stands there with his back to the plate, rubbing up the ball. And then turns around, walks slowly onto the mound once more. As the sign winds up and pitches, and the hitter gets ball four. It's over the plate, but too low. And that gets the base on ball to put him on first base with one out in the second inning for the Cubs. And Gabby Hartnett, Cubs catcher, gets a hand from the Cubs fans and a big boo from the Sox fans as he steps up there. Gabby was protesting before on the air by Warnke, claiming only one run should have come in when the ball that was thrown by Warnke went into the canvas down the left field line. And the Sox fans, of course, didn't like that at all and are telling him in no mean language every time he moves around, which is the old city rivalry, boys, the way it should be on both sides of the field. Stratton throws the first one to Gabby, who takes it for a ball. It's over the plate, but too low. One ball called. Johnny Corden coaching down at first base, making all sorts of wild gestures to indicate that he thinks Gabby ought to get a hold of one. Stratton throws again, and Leo puts away to take ball two. It's inside, drops out of Sewell's glove. And Luke picks it up, throws it back to the pitcher. Hayes dashed over to cover second, but Hack held first as the ball dropped practically at the catcher's feet. Two and nothing is the count, two balls and no strikes. And the hitter hits the next run of bounder, which Stratton knocks down. He races over towards shortstop to get it, but it's too late, and Gabby beats it out for a base hit, putting Cub runners on first and second with one out in the second inning. And Johnny Gill is at bat. Hard smash right back at Stratton, who made a courageous effort to get it, knocking it down with his bare hand. It rolled over towards the shortstop. Naturally, with the ball hit straight through the box, Appling was tearing for second and didn't have time to stop and shift into the infield to get the ball. Gabby beat it out for a base hit, and Cub runners are on first and second with one out in the second inning. And Johnny Gill, a husky left-handed hitter up there, Sewell suddenly calls time and asks for the pitcher to throw a couple to make sure that his hand's all right after stopping that one. Jimmy Dykes goes over to talk to him also. Bondi seems to think it's okay. However, they're taking no chances. And Sugar Cane has started to warm up down in the left field bullpen just to be ready in case that Monty does have trouble with controlling that ball. You know, that's liable to numb the fingers and make it a little tough. But he's thrown a couple and seems to think he's all right, so we're ready to go again. Monty's all set now. Pitch throws. And Johnny fouls the ball down past first base.
Carams against the stand, bounds out towards the left field line. Wally Stevenson warming up strength in the right field bullpen for the Cubs. Runs in to get the ball. Umpire Stewart takes it and throws it all the way into the screen. Now Stratton swings around. He's ready once more. Throws and Gill lines the ball into right field for a base hit. Hobbs coming in on it. The runner from second is scoring. The runner from first, Gabby, who isn't very fast on his feet, stops at second. Single to right by Gill. Driving in Hack to make the score 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. And leaves Cub runners on first and second with one out, one run home in the second inning. And Bill Jurgis is back. Jurgis, the shortstop, at the plate. He's a right-handed hitter, stands there waiting as Stratton gets his time. And the hitter hits the ball, a slow bounder back to Hayes, who scoops it up, flips it to Appling, he throws the first, and it's a double play, a good fast double play. Hayes to Appling to Venura for the second and third outs in the first half of the second inning, ending the inning with one run, two hits, and one man left on base for the Cubs. And the score is 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. White Sox is bad in the last half of the second inning with Sewell, Luke Sewell, White Sox, catcher, the first man at bat. Man at bat in the third inning for the Cubs, or rather, second inning for the Sox. Wait a minute, I'm going to keep them at bat. That wouldn't be so hot. Here we go in the second inning. I'll get this scoreboard straight. You know, it's sort of funny to see either Chicago team hitting first in the inning. Here's Luke Sewell at bat to start the last half of the second. He hits the first pitch, a high fly in short center field. Billy Herman racing back, finally calls for the ball and grabs it. He had to get it because neither Demery or Gallant could get in quick enough to reach it. And so Billy Herman makes the catch. Pretty well out into right center, having to go a long way to get it for the first out in the second inning. And Monty Stratton gets a swell hand from the fans as he comes walking out of the dugout and up there toward the plate. Stratton at bat with one out in the second inning for the White Sox. He scores 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. And Warnke gets the sign, starts to wind up. Pitches, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. One strike to count. Warnke waits there again, winds up once more, and throws, and the hitter takes a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high, and it's two strikes. Two strikes on Stratton. Again, the pitcher throws, and it's ball one. It's over the plate for two low. The count is one ball and two strikes on Monty. One and two, and the pitcher ready again. Starts to wind up once more, throws, and the hitter swings it a bounder down to Jurgis, who comes over fast, scoops it up nicely, throws the first, and Stratton is out for the second out in the second inning.
From the second inning for the White, and Rip Rat, leadoff man and left fielder, steps up there to the plate, Ratcliffe at bat. Winds up, throws, and Ratcliffe takes a strike over the heart of the plate. Loosened up pretty well, although he's loosened up in the first inning when they got busy on him. He's loosened up too much. The next one to follow it up, ground back of the plate for strike two, making it two strikes on the Ripper. Two strikes on Ratcliffe. Two out in the second inning for the Sox. They're leading the Cubs 3-1. Two out in the second inning for the Cubs. Warnke winds up again now, throws. And it's a ball. It's over the plate, but too low in the count. It's one ball and two strikes on Ratcliffe. One and two the count. One and two. Pitch ready once more. He's winding up. Throwing to the ball out to right center to make the catch for the third out. Three out. The ball was mighty well hit. And Demery had to race back toward right center out in front of the scoreboard. He got that ball, although still within about 20 or 25 feet of the
scoreboard, so it's no runs, no hits in the second inning, and at the end of the second inning, the White Sox are leading the Cubs by a score of 3-1. Well, Fred, you've got something to say here?
I have, Hal. This baseball presentation featuring Hal Cotton is coming to you as a presentation of the Voice of Labor. WCFL, Chicago. All right, Hal, it's yours.
Well, all right, I got it. In fact, I had it all the time. I was right over your shoulder. They got you out here in the cold now, Fred. You don't sit down there taking it like you did. Taking it easy in that air-cooled studio in that hot weather. Remember that, George? Oh, boy. What are you moaning about?
You used to sit here. Well, look at what you got out today. One coat, one sweater, another coat.
And I can remember when he used to sit here and once in a while even peel off that scratch shirt. Here we go. Warnick gets out in the third inning. He got a nice hand as he came up there. Pitcher winds up, throws, and Lon swings hit a ball down to Dyke back at third base. Jim gets it, arches the ball across the diamond, and Warnick is out for the first out in the third inning. One out in the third inning for the Cubs. And Augie Galland, the Cubs center fielder, steps up there. The leadoff man is back. Stratton stands there, getting his side, winds up. And pitches, and here's a high fastball inside for Paul Watt. One ball called. Sewell suddenly walks out into the infield with the ball this time before throwing it back to Stratton. Comes back behind the plate again. And Monty steps on the slab once more. Starts to wind up again, and pitches. The hitter takes ball two. It's a curveball down by the knees, and the count is 2-0 on Augie. Two balls and no strikes. Cubs in the last two innings have shown an inclination to wake this pitcher out. And there's a strike curving towards the hitter. Stayed over the inside corner a little above the knees to run the count 2-1. Two balls and one strike on Galland. Augie slips the dirt aside, then steps up to the plate. Starts to wind up. Throws, and he leans back to take ball three inside across the shoulders. So it's three balls and one strike on Galland. Augie batting left-handed as he always does against right-handed pitching. Wakes, Stratton winds up, throws, and the hitter swings it a high fly to right field. Haas jogs in easily. He's waiting for it. Has it, and it's two out in the third inning. Two out in the third inning for the Cubs. And Phil Cavaretta, the Cubs first baseman, left-handed hitter also, steps up there to the plate. Cavaretta taps. Stratton on the slab. Getting his time, starts his wind-up, and throws, and the hitter swings it a high fly out into short center field. Rosenthal coming in fast, Appling going out there, and Luke makes the catch nicely. Boy, he was going and still had his back to the infield as he caught that ball dropping out in front of him over his shoulder to make a nice play for the third out. And it's no runs, no hits in the third inning for the Cubs. It's four remaining 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. Starts at bat in the last half of the third inning. The first White Sox hitter, Larry Rosenthal, who seems to be the big shot in the attack for the Sox so far, although Appling is also keeping up with him in the hit department. Each one has made three hits in the two games. Taken. Let's take a look to make sure. Yesterday, Rosenthal had two hits and four times at bat. Now, Appling had one hit and two times of that. He had the two walks. That's, I knew their percentage was the same. So, Rosenthal now has three hits in the series. And Appling, two, as far as the White Sox are concerned. Oh, Lucius Luke showing it's no luck that he was up there leading both leagues in hitting. Last half of the third inning, Rosenthal up that plate. Hupke, left-handed hitter, who, from all prospects, should be one of the real rookies of the year next summer when he gets the first full season. He hits the first pitch to fly to left field. Gill is going back, grabs for the ball, and makes a great backhanded catch of it. The only trouble was he wouldn't have to make a great backhanded catch of it if he judged it right in the first place. Johnny went a-racing way back there to the wall, but he was running almost in the wrong direction. And finally, at the last minute, he veered over toward the foul line and made a one-handed backhanded stab of that long drive and held onto it for the first out in the third inning. And now Hart the bat swings the first pitch to foul it up into the second deck and a bounce clear back out into the field. And it's one strike on Hunt. One strike to count. He winds up again, throws, and mule swings and fouls the ball off the end of the bat. It just missed Benura, dashed over and hit the stand to the left of the plate and rolled back out in the field. Zeke gets it, throws it over to the fat boy who decides it should go into the screen, not the bench. Rolls it over to the announcer down there. So it's two strikes on Hart. With a pitcher waiting there again, he winds up and throws, and Mule takes a wide one low for a ball. And the count is one ball and two strikes on Hart. Warnicke gets the ball back from Hartnett. And they're getting his sign. He's winding up and throws, and the hitter swings the high fly out into left field. The left fielder Gill starts in on that, then changes his mind, backs up a little, and has that one easily for the second out. So it's two out in the third inning for the White Sox, and Benura is at bat. Zeke Benura up there with two out in the third inning for the White Sox. Warnicke throws the first one. It's a strike over the inside corner, waist high. One strike on Zeke. One strike is the count. Pitch waiting out there again. Stands there getting his sign. He winds up once more. And throws, and the hitter swings and misses a fastball for strike two. That makes it two strikes on Benura. Two outs for the Sox in the third inning. White Sox leading the Cubs 3-1. Ready again, winds up, throws, and it's over the plate for two low for ball two, or ball one, rather. The count is 1-2, one ball and two strikes on Big Z. 1-2 the count. Warnicke waiting for the sign, has it, winds up again. Throws, and the hitter takes ball two, and Hartnett wags his head at Warnicke as though to say that ball didn't go where he expected it to. Throws it back to Lon, flips the glove up over his wrist. Rubs the ball up a little bit, uses the rosin bag, and comes back on the slab. Count of two balls and two strikes on Benura. Warnicke again winds up, throws, and Zeke gets the third ball. That bird just barely missed the outside corner across the knees. And so Gabby takes the ball to look it over. Can't find anything wrong with it. Throws it back to Dick. Warnicke wipes his hands dry, looks over the boys out there in the field. And throws the next one high and inside for ball four, giving Zeke a base on ball. Well, well, well. He had two strikes on him and then threw four consecutive bad ones. So Benura gets a walk. And he's on first base with two out in the third inning. And Luke Appling at bat. Lucius Luke up there, still going like a streak. Warnicke seems to have a sign. He's ready to pitch. And throws. And it's inside and low for ball one. One ball called. Five consecutive bad ones that Warnicke's thrown out there. Four after getting two strikes on Benura to walk Zeke. And now one on Appling. So it's one ball called with a pitcher waiting there again. Just his cap swings around as he gets the sign. There's a stretch to first base. Then throws over there. The runner just barely slipped back ahead of the throw, and it was pretty doggone close. Zeke wasn't expecting that, and had a pretty big lead, so it had to slide back feet first to get in there. One ball called, and the pitcher is ready now to pitch to Appling again. Still watches the runner, but pitches, and Luke hits an easy bounder down to Billy Herman, who gets it, throws to first base, and it's three out. No runs, no hits, one man left on base in the third inning for the White Sox. And the score is still 3-1 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the third inning. Now, well, I guess they got somebody else down there because Fred's out here. But at any rate, it's the end of the third inning. So if you want some scores of what's going on in that World Series game, we return to the studio.
And here we are back in the studio to tell you that the Yankees are having a field day at the Polo Grounds in New York. Schumacher started out and was knocked out of the box, to be followed by Smith, who was promptly also knocked out of the box, and a right-hander Dick Kaufman has finally taken Smith's place as the giant pitcher. Lazare homered with the bases filled for the Yanks in the first half of the third inning. The score is now 9-1 in favor of the Yanks as we come to the close of the first half of the third inning. That's all the scores now, so back to Hal Totten and Comiskey Ball.
Back at the ballpark for the fourth inning, the first man at bat for the Cubs is Billy Herman, and he fouls the first pitch up against the front of the second deck or up above on the right of the plate for strike one. One strike on Bill. Stratton winding up again. Throws and the hitter takes a high one wide for ball one. So it's one ball and one strike on Herman. White Sox leading 3-1 in the fourth inning. Stratton waits out there again. Has the side, he starts to wind up. Throws and the hitter takes the ball inside across the chest. And it's two balls and one strike on Billy Herman. 2-1 the count. Two and one is the count, and the hitter swings again to miss a high pass ball inside for strike two. And it's two balls and two strikes on Billy Herman. Two and two the count. Stratton throws again, and Bill swings to hit the ball. Dyke takes it to his left, throws hard to first, and Herman is out easily for the second out in the fourth inning. Oh, wait a minute. First out in the fourth inning. I'm getting ahead of myself because I just started to look back. Herman has been completely stopped by the Sox pitchers in the two games so far. He got a walk in the sixth inning yesterday, but hasn't been on base yet today in two tries. And Demery is at bat. Frank watches the first one come over the heart of the plate, waist high for a strike. One strike on Demery. And the next one's wide and low for ball one. So the count is one ball and one strike. One and one the count. The hitter fouls this next one into the second deck down in front of us a little to our right. And it's one ball and two strikes. One and two on Demery. Stratton throws once more. Frank gets another ball high and wide, making it two balls and two strikes. Two and two the count. Monty goes back to use the rosin bag this trip, then comes back onto the rubber once more. And they're getting a sign. Starts to wind up. And pitches and the hitter swings the high foul, going into the stands back at first base. Minora comes over and is, what pose is that? Number seven, that one with his hand in the air as he comes over there. But anyway, he was shading his eyes from the sun, and the ball landed pretty well back in the seats out of his reach. It's still two balls and two strikes. Run two on Frank, and he hits the next for another foul into the stand to the right of the plate. Misses the second deck, goes into the lower. Two balls and two strikes. Run two the count. And he hits the next, a high bounder, and Mr. Dyke grabs for it, but it takes a high bounce. A nasty one hits his glove. Rounds up back of Appling and the runner is safe at first base on what I imagine is a hit. Because it took a very, very bad hop just as it was about to get there, yeah. It's a base hit for Demery. Puts Frank on first base with one out in the fourth inning. And Stanley Hackett bats. Stratton gets ready to pitch the first one, throws. And Stan hits the ball hard out into left center. Rosenthal dashes over there and makes a very, very nice running catch. And throws the ball into second base to chase the runner back to first. For some reason or other, they didn't have Hack figured just right there, I'm afraid, because Rosenthal was playing in dead center field instead of left center where they usually play Stan. And as a result, he had to do a terrific a lot of running to get to that ball and make a sensational catch, but Hack hit the ball right in his usual groove. And now Hartnett takes the first pitch high and inside for ball one. One ball called. Emery on first base, two out of the fourth inning. One ball called on Hartnett. Who looks the ball over, throws it back out to Stratton. Marty ready again, throws. Gabby hits the ball on the line, and Appling leaps into the air to make a one-handed catch, and it's three out.
Luke Appling leaped high into the air to make a one-handed stab of what looked like a sure line drive that time. And the White Sox defense again is pulling this club along because Mr. Stratton has not been especially a better pitcher than Warnke, but he's had much the better support, particularly in the case of Warnke himself. So it's no run, one hit, one man left on base. In the fourth inning for the Cubs, score is still 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. Sox have batted in the last half of the fourth with Jackie Hayes, the first man up. Warnke's been out there warming up with Ken O'Day. Hartnett standing right back at Ken. And here is Jackie Hayes walking up there at the plate to be the first man at bat in the fourth inning. Hayes up there. Pitcher winds up, throws the first one, and Hayes takes it inside and low for ball one. You people probably heard this on the switch back to the studio, but the crowd's cheering when the third inning score of the Yankee-Giant game goes up, which shows one of those old Yankee innings. And here's a wide one low for ball two, and the count is 2-0 on Jackie Hayes. First man at bat in the fourth inning for the White Sox. Again, winding up, throws, and it's a high one inside for ball two. Rather over the inside corner across the chest for strike one. Cut and look at the plate, not off that scoreboard. That isn't going to help any. 2-1, and there's strike two. The hitter fouls the ball back to the screen, and the count is 2 balls and 2 strikes. 2-2 the count. Two and two with the pitcher ready once more. Again, starts to wind up, throws, and Jackie fouls this ball into the sand to the right of the plate. And it's 2-2. 2 balls and 2 strikes still on Jackie Hayes. Ernie?
Well, City Series Ernie's here.
Uh-huh. How you doing, Ernie? Coffee looks all right. 2-2 is the count, and Hayes swings the next hit, a high foul to the right of the plate. Cabaretta's coming in from first base and makes the catch just about halfway between first base and the bench, and then he threw the ball to Hartnett, who threw it back clear past him, and it goes on down the right field line where one of the boys from the bench kept it and throws it on in. And Jimmy Dyke steps up there to the plate. Dykes up there at the plate with one out of the fourth inning. Warnke starts to wind up, throws, and Jim swings, hit a high bounder. Jurgis backs up and goes to his right a little, takes the ball, throws to first. Everetta made a swell stretch into the infield. He got that ball just off the ground and way into the infield, but Dykes is out for the second out. That makes it 2 out of the fourth inning for the Sox, and Luke Sewell is at bat. Sewell up there at the plate. But 2 out of the fourth inning for the White Sox. So the first one, Luke takes a good strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. One strike on Sewell. Warnke again starts to wind up. Throws and the hitter takes strike two. Luke doesn't like that and slaps the bat on the ground a second and turns his back on the umpire. Ball just barely knee high. It seemed to be over the heart of the plate. Luke must have thought it was a little bit low. So it's 2 strikes on Sewell with the pitcher winding up again. He throws and the hitter takes a ball. It's over the plate, but this time it was too low, and the count is 1 ball and 2 strikes on Luke. White Sox leading 3-1, last half of the fourth inning. Warnke again winding up, throws, and it's ball two, wide and low. So it's 2 balls and 2 strikes. 2-2 on Luke. And the hitter starts to swing at the neck, but he tried to stop, but he went on through with it, striking out for the third out. Tried to stop that swing, but the ball was started around too hard, and he couldn't pull up on it. And so he strikes out for the third out of the fourth inning. No runs, no hits in the fourth inning for the Sox. And the score is still 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. Cubs coming to bat in the first half of the fifth inning with Johnny Gill, the first man up. Should I shoot this red hot before I eat it, George? You think it'd be safer?
I don't know. It doesn't seem to be particularly alive.
This one tastes pretty good, I'll guarantee that.
I wonder how I sound when I talk with my own for.
You're working? Mouthful was good. I don't know when I'll get back the next one. Time working here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gill hits the first pitch, an easy bounder down to Hayes, who got throws the first base, and Johnny is out for the first out in the fifth inning, bringing Bill Jurgis to bat. Stratton winds up now, throws the first one, and Jurgis swings, hit a hard bounder down to Appling, who gets it nicely, throws the first, and Jurgis is out easily for the second out. That makes it two out in the fifth inning for the Cubs, and the next man up there, Warnke, the Cub pitcher, is walking slowly up in the bench. Gets a nice hand from the fans. It looks very much as though that very costly throw of his may mean the ball game if something doesn't happen, because since then he gone along in great style, only one scratch hit being made off him. And the first pitch to Warnke is a wide one for a ball. Stratton waits there for the next sign, has it. He's winding up. Throws, and Dick gets ball two. It's inside across the way. And the count is 2-0. 2 balls and no strikes on Warnke. Stratton winding up, throws once more, and he gets that one over the outside corner, letter high for a strike. And it's 2 balls and 1 strike. On Warnke. 2 out for the Cubs in the fifth. White Sox leading 3-1. There's ball three, a wide one low, and it's 3 balls and 1 strike on Warnke. 3-1 the count. Again, the wind-up pitch, and the hitter hits the ball, a slow bounder down to Dykes, who got to throw to first base, and Warnke is out for the out. So Hayes, Appling, and Dykes all had a hand in retiring the side that time on throws to Benora. No runs, no hit. In the first half of the fifth inning. And the White Sox still lead the Cubs by a score of 3-1. Sox is bad in the last half of the fifth with Monty Stratton, the pitcher, the first man up. There goes another mouthful. This kid's been pitching since he got back in that lineup after all the operations and things. It begins to look more and more as though the illness that caused him all that stay in the hospital and the long layoff to recover his strength and get back in shape may have cost the White Sox not only second place, but possibly more, because he certainly has been a great pitcher since he got back in there, as he was before he was taken ill. Stratton at bat, Warnke's first pitch is a strike over the heart of the plate, waist high. 1 strike. On Stratton. And Warnke winds up, throws again. Monty swings and hits the ball hard. And Herman makes a great backhanded stop back at second base to get the ball, throws the first. Cavaretta drops it, and the runner is safe. Herman made a wonderful stop back at second base. A great backhanded stop through to first. The throw is out there. There's an error charge, but they haven't told us yet who the is charged with it, whether Cavaretta for dropping the ball or Herman on the throw. Sierra is charged to Cabaretta for dropping the ball. It was a marvelous play by Herman, but Bill dropped the ball. So Stratton's on first base, nobody out of the fifth. Radcliffe hits the bounder down to Jurgis, who gets it, flips it to Billy Herman. He was ready to throw to first, but the ball had been hit so slowly that Radcliffe was practically at first base, and Bill held the ball, letting Radcliffe reach first without a throw. He didn't have a chance of getting his man. So Radcliffe's on first base with one out of the fifth inning, and Rosenthal is at bat. Warnke watches first base, throws, and the hitter takes the curveball wide and low for ball one. Pitcher ready out there again. Throws, and Rosenthal fouls the ball back into the front of the second deck down below us, and it bounds back down into the field. It's one and one. One and one is the count now on Rosenthal, left-handed hitter. Warnke waits there again for the sign. Swings around as he gets it. And pitches, and the hitter swings it, a long foul way down the left field line, back underneath the second deck, and it's one ball and two strikes. Warnke steps up onto the slab again, watches the plate, puts it first, then pitches, and the hitter hits the ball out through into left field for a base hit. Jurgis, who was playing pretty well to his left, couldn't get a hold of it because he had a long way to go, and as a result, the ball goes through into left field for Rosenthal's second hit of the day and fourth hit of the series. So the White Sox have runners on first and second with one out in the fifth inning, and Mulehaus at bat. Warnke ready now. Back at second base, and throws, and Haas takes a wide one. It was curving toward the plate, but didn't curve soon enough. And it's ball one. One ball called. Warnke throws again for ball two. It's wide and low, and the count is two and nothing on Haas. Two balls and no strike. White Sox runners on first and second. One out. And White Sox are leading the Cubs by a score of 3-1. And a pitcher stands there waiting again. Swings right, takes another look back at second base. And throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high to make the count 2-1 on Hart. Two balls and one strike. Two balls and one strike. The pitcher waiting again. Warnke has the sign, steps on the slab. Back at second. And throws, and the hitter swings, hit a foul. It's just up onto the roof of the stand above third base. Almost hit the front of the roof, but just eased up over it. And it's 2-2. Two balls and two strikes on Haas.
Like old times, smelling that pipe, George.
Mm-hmm. I find I can still stand it. I don't know. 2-2 is the count, but she throws again, and the hitter swings to foul the ball back to the screen. It's still two balls and two strikes on Haas. Remember, White Sox runners on first and second, one out of the fifth inning. White Sox leading by a score of 3-1. Warnke uses the rising bag again, loves up the ball. Around the runners, then steps onto the slab, and is getting his time. And pitches, and the hitter hits the ball hard toward left field. Jurgis comes up with it nicely, throws to second. Herman's throw to first, completes a double play, although Cabaretta had to make a sensational reaching catch away out to the right. a very fast and long double play. One of those plays that had to be made lightning fast or had been too late. And Cavaretta redeemed himself that time after having let the first man get the base by dropping a throw. He made a very fine play to reach way out to the right and get Herman Pacey throw to first to complete that one. So it's no run, one hit, one error, and one man left on base in the last half of the fifth inning, and the score is still 3-1 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the fifth inning. Now, I think, Fred, you've got a little message to say again, huh?
Yes, I have, Hal Totten. You know, you've been saying that things were coming across the letters all afternoon, so supposing we say a few letters like this is the voice of labor. WCFL, Chicago.
Oh, I guess I see what you got to do to be a studio announcer. You got to be able to come up with things like that, quickies, huh?
Oh,
I get it. Should have taken longer, though, Fred. I'm still chewing. Here we go in the sixth inning. Galanis bat started off with the Cubs. And the first pitch is too low. It's ball one. One ball on Galan. White Sox leading 3-1. Augie swings the next. It's a high fly into center field. Rosenthal's going back. And he's under it now. Has it. It's one out in the sixth inning. One out of the sixth inning for the Cubs. And Cavaretta is at bat. Joe Cavaretta up there at the plate. Yeah, Mr. Rosenthal was throwing divots as he raced back for that one. Stopped up. Stratton throws the first one, and Phil swings at a high one. Tried to get around on it, but he stopped it and hit it down toward the first base coach's box where Johnny Corden gets it. Throws it back to the pitcher. It's one strike on Cavaretta. Bat with one out for the Cubs in the sixth inning. Stratton throws again, and Phil takes the curveball inside and low. The ball bounced into the air out of the catcher's glove. Landed out in front of the plate. And the pitcher winds up once more, throws the hitter, swings, and fouls the ball back to the screen. And it's one and two, one ball and two strikes. One and two now with the pitcher ready again. Winds up, throws, and Phil lines the ball into center field for a base hit. A single to center field by Cavaretta, putting him on first base with nobody out in the sixth inning. And Billy Herman up there at the plate. Billy, who hasn't had a base hit in the series so far and who had a terrific slump at the end of the season, making only about two hits in his last five or six games. Herman at bat, one out of the sixth inning. Cavaretta on first base. Score 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. And Herman takes the first pitch in by his shoulders for ball one. Ball called. Ciretti again throws for a strike. A beauty over the heart of the plate, just about letter high, and the hitter let it go by. So it's 1-1. One and one is the count. And there is a ball wide and low, making it two balls and one strike on Billy Herman. 2-1. Once again, the pitch is ready. He throws and the hitter swings a high foul coming back toward us, lands just in front of us in the second. The man caught it there, and the force of catching it landed him kerplunk back in his chair there. And it's 2-2 on Billy Herman. Two balls and two strikes. Outfielder's playing him fairly deep, a little bit to the right. Hoss is playing him pretty well toward the line. And Rosenthal a little bit toward right center. And the next one, Herman tried to get away from it, but the ball curved in and hit him on the right wrist or right hand. Charlie Grimm comes tearing in from the coach's box and apparently hurt him pretty much. And Luke Sewell bends over him. Stratton comes in to take a look. And the trainer, Andy Lotshaw, comes running in. Woody English, the captain, running out of the bench up there at the plate. That ball seemed to sail as it got up there at the plate. Here comes Doc Davis now, the club physician. Well, they'll have a real delegation up there. And Herman shows any signs of being hurt that way, you can count on it he's plenty hurt, because he's one of these boys that doesn't show much in the way of emotion when he gets bumped or cut or anything else. And that ball seemed to hang out there in front of him. He started to step one way and then another, and then it shot in toward him and hit him. Doc Davis is now working on his wrist to see whether it might possibly be fractured, or if he can see any signs of it, he'll go right out of there. And they're all standing around. In the meantime, Cabretta had gone to second base and is standing out there talking to Appling. Hayes also there. Herman walks away from the crowd and stands there and leans over on his knee. Charlie Grimm talking to him, telling him if he doesn't feel all right to get out of there. And Billy probably wants to stay in. Stratton starts back to the mound to throw a few to Sewell. Keep loosened up there while the rest of the boys still gather around. Jimmy Dykes, the manager of the Sox, is also up there, taking a big look, and Benora's in there also. Herman finally decides to go on down to first base. That right arm is hanging alongside of him. He walks down there, but he gets a nice hand. Benora walking alongside of him, the two of them talking. But he finally reaches first base. And the next man up there is Frank Demery. Now the White Sox start a couple of pitches warming up in the bullpen. Kane and the inevitable Mr. Brown warming up out there. And here is Demery at bat. Cub runners on first and second. One out in the sixth inning. And Demery hits the first one. A line drive to Hayes, who gets it, throws back to Benora for a double play. A line smash right into Hayes' hands. He doesn't have to move out of his tracks to get it. And a quick throw to first base. Doubles Herman and ends the threat just like that. Bang, without any delay at all, at all. It's no runs, one hit, one man left on base in the first half of the sixth inning. And the score is still 3-1 in favor of the White Sox. White Sox is bat in the last half of the sixth with Benora the first man up there. Benora the first man at bat. That ball was really tagged. That's the kind of a ball that all the New York writers cry about every time DiMaggio hits one and it gets caught. Always a foot to the right or a foot to the left, and it would have been a two-base hit. The trouble is, a foot to the right or a foot to the left doesn't mean a thing if you hit it right at somebody. Willie English is going in to play second base now, and Billy Herman tried to throw a ball, couldn't control it, and is walking off. English is playing second base. That injury was just too much for Billy. And Herman gets a hand as he walks off the field. Here we go. The Jawanicki out there gets his time, starts, throws, and the hitter hits the ball right to the good hard line single. That ball all but back right up. Jawanicki is good with it by him. And the first base with nobody out by the Sox for the White Sox. The White Sox league leading hitter, major league leading hitter. Shortstop, right-handed hitter is at bat. Benora on first base, Appling up there at the plate with nobody out in the sixth inning. Warnke ready, pitches, and Appling drives the ball into right field for another base hit. Right fielder Demery grabs the ball, fumbles it, but picks it up again, and Benora turns and goes back to second base. And it's Appling's second hit of the game and third hit of the series. So the White Sox have runners on first and second, nobody out, and Jackie Hayes. He is up there at the plate. Boy, who has done great work the latter part of the season and proved at least he justified things I said about him for 3 or 4 years when he really had his chance and got in there and could bear down. What a second baseman and tough hitter he is, although not only tough this year, he hit 312 for the season, which is a lot of hits. Cubs again start Henshaw warming up and Root. Henshaw and Root warming up in the right field bullpen. And the Sox are keeping a pitcher warmed up down their side of the field. Kane. And now Hayes bunts the first one. Hack gets it, throws the first. English getting over there to take the throw on the sacrifice. And it moves the runners to second and third. With only one out of the sixth inning. And Jimmy Dykes, always dangerous in a pinch, is up there at the plate. Now we have one of those tough pitchers in the pinch against a tough hitter in the pinch. And we'll see what happens. The infield playing in part way to the infield grass, not all the way. And they're going to walk Dykes and take a chance on Sewell. Going to walk Dykes on purpose. It isn't so much to take a chance on Sewell as it is to get the bases full where force plays are possible. As it is now, there's no chance of a force play. And so they want to get those bases full for that reason and gamble on that proposition. There's the fourth ball. And Dykes got the base on. He took the fourth one wide. Gabby started to throw the ball to third as Dykes walked across in front of him. He didn't intend to. And so Dykes turned around and acted as though he was going to be real mad at Gabby. And as he flung the bat back at him to throw it to the bat boy, he swung it right across in front of Leo. And that caused a laugh from everybody. Now the bases are full with one out in the sixth inning. And Luke Sewell, another dangerous boy with the bases occupied out there, takes the first pitch inside and low for a ball. The infielders have moved back. That is the second baseman and shortstop move back. First and third baseman still in fairly close. He winds up once more, throws, and the hitter hits a beauty into center field for a base hit. And Galan races over to get it. One run in, second run scoring. Dykes pulling up at third base. And a sharp single to center field by Sewell. Scores Benura. Scores Appling. And puts Dykes on third base. So the White Sox have runners on first and third. One out, two runs home in the sixth inning. They're now leading the Cubs by a score of 5-1, the same score by which they won yesterday. And Monty Stratton, White Sox pitcher, is coming up there to the plate. Stratton at bat. Old Lucius Luke, same way as he did all through the season. When there were runs out there to score, you could almost always count on Sewell getting a hold of one, hitting it somewhere. Stratton hits the first pitch, a drive into left field for another base hit. Gill is coming down there, the runner from first going for third. Gill gets the ball, throws it into third base. The runner bound slides in, and the ball bounds out that past third base. Jurgis gets over there, gets it, but Stratton slides into second base. Ball bounded and hit the runner as he slid into third. And then as Hack stood there looking for it, Stratton tore for second. Jurgis had to come all the way over to get the ball and throw it to second base. And as a result, the runners are on second and third with another run home. And Mr. Stratton still appearing as a base hitter of considerable worth and merit, as he did in that last game of the season. George, did you notice whether they called an error on that throw-in or not? Did anybody look up to see? And now, Henshaw.
On who?
Aaron Hack. For heaven's sake, they call an Aaron Hack, and he never had the ball in his hands. How do you figure that out? Well, that's all right. Henshaw is coming in now into the infield to leave Warnke. And Lon turns and starts over to the dugout. And Henshaw, Little Roy, who is a Southsider, lived out here in this part of town and went to school out here at the University of Chicago, is now pitching for the Cubs. White Sox have three runs home, one out, still have runners on second and third. And Ratcliffe is the next hitter. Henshaw finishing the warm-up. Faces Ratcliffe now. Ratcliffe up there. Henshaw starts to wind up. Throws, and it's a bad ball. Wide and low for ball one. Waits out there again. Winds up once more. And there's ball two. Another ball that breaks too wide. And the count is 2-0. Two balls and no strikes. Roy waiting there for the next sign. Has it. He winds up. And pitches for ball three. Another ball that curves altogether too wide and low. And it's 3-0. Now in addition to fact, Root has stopped warming up, and Bryant is warming up for the Cubs. Henshaw gets his sign, winds up again. Throws, and the hitter takes strike one. It's over the heart of the plate, just a little below the waist. to run the count to 3-1. Three balls and one strike. And ball four comes by wide and low. Ratcliffe gets the base on balls, and the bases are full. Rosenthal up there now. Rosenthal at bat. Already the leading hitter of the series, and robbed one hit a little while ago on a good fielding play. Made two hits so far today, two yesterday. Larry Rosenthal at bat. And the first pitch curves pretty wide and low for ball one. Coming up there at the plate and then curved very sharply and way outside. So it's one ball called. Hinshaw waits out there again, gets the sign, winds up. Throws for a strike over the inside corner waist high to make the count one ball and one strike on Rosenthal. 1-1 the count. Hinshaw winds up again, pitches the hitter, fouls the ball above into the left of the plate, into the second deck, and it's 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Rosenthal. 1-2 the count. Waiting out there again. Takes quite a while. Finally starts to wind up. Throws, and Larry swings hit a ball hard down to Cabaret, who grabs for it. And it bounds away from him and gets back to English, who throws the first to get the runner. But the runner is safe. Cabaret, after fumbling the ball, started after it, but English waved him back to first. And by the time he got back there, the runner is safe, and it's charged as another error for Cabaret, who missed tagging the bag. That rule is definitely covered. When a man fails to tag a base, why, he is charged with an error. And now here is Newhouse at bat. Haas up there at the plate. Pitch for a ball wide. Base is still full. Winds up again, throws, and it's a wide one low for ball two, and Hartner turns around, speaks a little piece about that one. Four runs home this inning. White Sox now leading 7-1. Jurgis comes over and talks to Henshaw for a moment. Roy throws again, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate about knee-high, and Newell naturally playing the string out of ways, let it go by. So it's 2-1. Infield playing in very close. Base is full. Only one out, four runs, home in the sixth. Henshaw again winding up, throws, and it's very wide and low for ball three. Way, way outside, and it's three balls and one strike. 3-1 on Hart. Henshaw waiting out there again. Winds up. Throws, and Mule gets ball four. It's wide, and a run is forced across the plate. A run is forced home as Haas walks. The fifth run of the inning, and the White Sox lead 8-1. And English walks in to talk to Hartnett a moment and looks over towards the bench as though we may expect Bryant to come in there. Base is still full. Five runs home in the sixth inning. English is talking to umpire Ormsby, who turns to tell the field announcer what to announce, and the pitcher starts in the right field bullpen. Hartnett's out there talking to Henshaw, leaning on his shoulder. Roy just, frankly, he had a curveball breaking off today. It was just about as tough a looking curveball as I've looked at for a long time. But he didn't have control of it, and Henshaw is one of these type of young pitcher that if the control isn't there, he doesn't have much chance of going anywhere. He had that ball breaking a foot to a foot and a half many times, never less than 6 or 8 inches, and breaking a little bit too far away from the plate. As a result, he was in the hole most of the time and ended up by walking that man to force in a run. However, there was a chance of his being out of the inning if Cabaret had fielded the ball hit right at him. He wasn't charged with an error on that, but he was charged with an error when he failed to touch first after taking throwback of the play of the ball from English. Now Clay Bryant, big husky right-handed pitcher, is out there on the mound finishing his warm-up. Bryant finishes the warm-up and is ready now as Zeke Benora steps up at the plate. Clay takes a look around, see where everybody's playing out there, now gets ready to pitch the first one to Benora. Winds up, throws, and Zeke takes the curveball wide for ball one. One ball called. To ready again, starts to wind up, throws, and it's ball two. It's over the plate, but too low, and the count is 2-0 on Benora. Nothing is the count, but a pitcher ready again. And they're watching the plate. Gets his sign. He's winding up. And throws, and Zeke jumps back to take the third ball. A bad one, and he may walk the fourth in another run. The count. And the next one comes down the middle for a strike. Oh, Zeke put on a big act that time. Started for first base. Cut the heart of the plate way back. Couldn't have been more of a strike anywhere. It's 3-1, 3 balls and 1 strike on Benora. Bryant rubbing up the ball again. And ball four comes inside, and Zeke also gets the base on ball. And another run is forced across the plate. Sixth run of the inning. Bringing Luke Appling to bat, with the White Sox leading now by a score of 9-1 in the sixth inning. White Sox leading 9-1. I guess they saw what the Yankees did down there in New York and decided they had to put on a big inning too, huh? Luke Appling up there. Bryant starts to wind up. Throws, and Luke takes a high one inside for ball one. A slow ball, change of pace. Root is warming up now for the Cubs again. Winding up, throws once more, and it's a strike. Curveball breaking away from the hitter. Caught the inside corner above waist high to make it 1-1. It's the next one, a beauty into left center for a base hit. Two more runs are scoring. The runner first, going for third, and Gill's throw is very wide. By the time Hack recovers it, Appling has raced to second. Line singled left center by Appling, scoring Rosenthal and Haas. With two more runs, 8 runs this inning. White Sox now leading by a score of 11-1. And they still have runners on second and third. With only one out, the one out being a sacrifice by Hayes, who was now at bat earlier in the inning. Infield still playing back as Jackie takes the first pitch for a strike over the heart of the plate, way high. And there's the ball, making the count 1-1 on Hayes. 1-1 the count. Bryant winds up, throws again. Jackie swings in a high bounder. Bryant gets it. The runners hold their bases, so he throws the first, getting Hayes for the second out. Making it 2 out in the seventh inning and bringing Dykes to bat. Dykes up there at the plate. Dykes was walked purposely with runners on second and third earlier in the inning. But that strategy didn't work when Mr. Sewell stepped up there and smack one. And Dykes hit the foul down to Billy Webb coaching at third. He grabs it, throws it out to Hack.
Goes on around the Cub infield, which still seems to be showing a lot of fire, although they're way, way behind right now. Winds up, throws again, and Dyke takes a slow one. The curveball wide for ball one, and the count is one ball and one strike. One and one the count. Bryant throws again, and Dyke falls down under one that almost hit him in the shoulders, and he takes it for ball two. So the count is two balls and one strike. Two and one on Dyke. Ready once more, starts to wind up, throws, and it's a ball that hits the bat and hits the ground and then bounded foul fair over to stand to the right of the plate. It's still two and two. Two balls and two strikes. Bryant waits there, rubbing up that ball pretty carefully. Finally starts his wind up and throws, and Dyke. Dyke did the same thing that time he did before, and he looked at the bat and he looked at the plate and he said, I couldn't do it again if I tried. He starts to swing, and then as he pulls back, he doesn't pull back quick enough. The ball hits the bat and bounds down onto the plate and then caroms clear over to the right against the stand. Two and two, and there's ball three. It's inside across the waist to make it three balls and two strikes on Jimmy Dyke. Three and two the count. Three and two now. Throws again, and it's ball four wide, and Dyke gets his second walk of the inning. Once more filling the bases for Mr. Lucius Luke Steele. Mr. Steele is up there again of the Ohio, but formerly of the Alabama Steels. He singled with the bases full earlier in the inning to drive in the first two of these eight runs that have scored. White Sox are leading 11-1 in the last half of the sixth. And Sewell takes the first pitch, a curveball wide and low for ball one. Waits there again, has the sign, he's winding up. Throws, and Sewell swings at a pop fly, which English is calling for. He has it, it's three out, and they finally retire the side. And of course, the White Sox fans come up with a big howl, because they've been waiting for this all year, in fact, for several years. Very several. In the last half of the sixth inning, there were eight runs. Let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six, two errors, and three. And the score is 11-1 in favor of the White Sox at the end of the sixth inning. First man at bat for the Cubs in the seventh will be Hack. And now Mr. Stratton doesn't have a very difficult job. One more bite of his dog down here. Hey, some of the Cubs fans are presenting, they're standing up. This isn't a hot dog now, it's an ice dog. Seventh inning. Stanley Hack at bat for the Cubs. Stratton starts to wind up. Pitches. Sam takes the curveball. It catches the outside corner knee high for a strike. One strike on Hack. Stratton throws again. The hitter swings and it's a bounder down to Hayes. It goes to his left to get it. Throws to first. And Sam is out for the first out in the seventh inning. One out in the seventh inning for the Cubs. And Gabby Artnett is at bat. Gabby takes the first one for a strike. It's over the heart of the plate, but down just about knee high. Not much more than that. One strike.
And he hits the next one, a beauty down past third base, going on down with Radcliffe, tearing over for it. Gabby makes the turn, but stops at first, goes back there when the throw comes in from Radcliffe. Gabby, as we've mentioned, is no particular gazelle on his feet. And while most fellas might have had a double on that, Gabby played it safe. I mean, after all, you crouch around behind that plate as many years as he has, and you won't be doing much gazelling either. Allen is going out there to run now in place of Hartnett. Allen running for Hartnett. And Gabby gets the hand and the stump of fans. He walks over to the bench. And Gill steps up there taking the first pitch over the plate, but too low, and it's ball one. One ball called. Throws again, and Johnny fouls the ball on the ground to the right of the plate. That makes it one and one. One ball and one strike on Johnny Gill. Stratton wakes out there, slaps the ball into the glove a couple of times, uses the rosin bag, steps up on the slab, swings around ready to pitch. Pitches, and it's a high one wide for ball two, making the count two balls and one strike. 2-1 is the count. He's ready out there again. He throws, and Gill hits a long drive way out deep right field, but it's foul. Foul against the right field wall. Wouldn't have gone in, but it was outside by several feet, and it's two balls and two strikes on Gill. Husky, left-handed hitter. Stratton used the rosin bag, has another ball to pitch. He's ready once again, swings around, he gets the sign. And pitches, and Gill swings, hit a pop foul to the left of the plate. Sewell is over there waiting for it, has it, and it's two out of the seventh inning. Jurgis up there now, two out of the seventh inning for the Cubs. Allen running for Hartnett, still on first base. Score, 11-1. Favor the White Sox. Throws, and Jurg takes a strike over the outside corner about waist high. One strike on Jurgis. Ready out there again. Throws. And he brings in a high fly in a short center field. Hayes is going back. Rosenthal coming in. And Jackie lets Larry come on in to make the catch after a long run for the third out. And it ends the first half of the seventh inning with no run, one hit, one man left on base. And now the White Sox crowd, which is by far the biggest percentage of this audience today, steps up for its seventh inning stretch. And with a few cheers and yells, they get the old kinks out of the legs as the White Sox come in there to take their turn at bat in the last half of the seventh inning with Monty Stratton, the first man up. Stratton, who, as I said, in the latter part of the season, the last couple of games hit very well and has hit hard today. Only a great play robbed him of a base hit in the fifth there, and then he hit one in the sixth and hit it plenty hard to drive in a run, and he later scored one himself. Ken O'Day is now out there to catch for the Cubs. And the first man at bat in the seventh inning is Monty Stratton. And were you saying you wanted to say something, Mr. Fowler?
Yes, Al Cotton. All I'd like to say is this is the voice of labor. WCFL, Chicago.
Well, if that's what you wanted to say, that's perfectly okay. I don't know why I shouldn't say it. In fact, you did say it. Here's Stratton at bat. Start the last half of the seventh. He swings hard and misses the first one for a strike. One strike on Stratton. Bryant waiting out there again, has the sign. Starts to wind up. And pitches, and Monty swings in a high fly into left center. The line is jogging in under it. He's waiting, has it. And it's one out in the seventh inning for the Sox.
One out of the seventh, and Rip Ratcliffe, White Sox left fielder, is up there at the plate. Ratcliffe at bat. She winds up, throws the first one, and the Ripper takes a wide one across the waist for ball one. One ball called. Ready once more, winds up again, throws, and it's a strike over the outside corner above the knees, so the count is one ball and one strike on Ratcliffe. One and one the count. Ryan again taking that swinging windup. Throws a slow one, which Rip lets float wide and low, a curve ball for ball two. And it's two balls and one strike on the Ripper. Two and one the count. Winds up, throws again for ball three, wide across the waist, and it's three balls and one strike on Ratcliffe. Three and one. Ready out there, winds up, throws again, and it's a strike over the outside corner across the knees to make it three and two. Three balls and two strikes on Ratcliffe. Three and two to count. Swings again to hit a bounder. English is in front of it, gets it, throws the first, and it's two out of the seventh inning. Two out of the seventh inning for the Sox. And Larry Rosenthal again is at bat. He's made four hits and eight times at bat in the series. Happening has four hits and six times at bat, so he's now the league leader, the senior series leading hitter. And here's the first pitch to Rosenthal to take the wide one across the way for ball for a strike. Caught the outside corner at that. No, it was a ball. I looked at the board. I didn't see the umpire's hand go up, and the board showed a strike. But they changed it to a ball. So it's ball one. And there's ball two wide across the waist, making it two and nothing, two balls and no strikes on Rosenthal. Two and nothing is the count. It's ready again. Winds up, throws, and Larry swings and misses a curveball, a slow curve for strike one, making it two balls and one strike. Throws. Two and one the count. Ryan taking that easy wind-up, throws again. Larry gets strike two, a fast one over the outside corner, a little below the waist, to make it two balls and two strikes on Rosenthal. Two and two the count. She's winding up. Throws again, and it's a high one that hits the catcher's glove, bounds off to the left of the plate, and it's still three and two. Three balls and two strikes on Larry. Three and two is the count with the pitcher ready once more. He starts to wind up again. And the hitter swings the foul ball back to the screen. It's still three balls and two strikes. Still three and two on Rosenthal. Three and two with the pitcher ready once more. Winding up. And he pitches for ball four. Larry gets the base on ball. Puts him on first base with two outs in the seventh inning on Mule Haas is at bat. Haas up there at the plate. Brian has the sign. He's ready. It's at first base. Throws and the hitter takes the ball. It's inside and low. Day comes up with it ready. Springer and Rosenthal, a fast man, might be on the way or have a big lead. And, of course, the rumor still is naturally over in this league, same as in the National, that he's throwing as it all it should be, perhaps. Still watching first base. Throws and the hitter takes a wide one across the knees for ball two. And the count is 2-0, 2 balls and no strikes on her. 2-0 the count. There's a sign out there again. And pitches, and it's ball 3. Well, it's wide across the waist. Now O'Day suddenly looks at the ball out for another one, and without further ado, umpire Orange hands it to him, throwing the other one out and into over to the Sox bench without even examining it. And the count is 3-0. 3 balls and no strikes. Pitch ready out there again. Throws. And it's a high one wide for ball 4. And Hart also gets a base on ball, moving Rosenthal to second base. And the White Sox have runners on first and second. 2 out in the 7th inning. And Zeke Benura is at bat. Benura up there at the plate. Out there, wipes his hands dry, swings around the flat. Pitch is so close to Zeke, he has to almost fall down to get away from it and take it for ball 1. O'Day grabs the ball, throws it back out there to the pitcher, and Bryant waits there again. Swings around on the rubber, looks back at second, pitches, and it's ball 2. It's inside and low. Bryant's control is ordinarily pretty good, but it certainly isn't out there today. He walked a couple men in his trick in the 6th inning, and now he's walked 2 already in the 7th. As runners on first and second with 2 out, White Sox leading 11-1. Ryan throws again, and it's a strike. It got the outside corner across the shoulder to make it 2 balls and 1 strike. And 1 is the count. And Zeke swings in a high fly foul to the right of the plate. O'Day's jogging down there, calling for the ball. Has it, and it's 3 out, ending the 7th inning. No runs, no hits, 2 men left on base for the White Sox. And at the end of the 7th inning, the White Sox are leading the Cubs by a score of 11-1. A rather overwhelming margin in any man's league. Now somebody's going to come to bat in place. Lillard coming to bat in place of Bryant. In the last half of the 7th inning. Around the first half of the 8th inning. Still, it's hard to figure a Chicago team is up to start an inning. I don't know. When you talk about Cubs or White Sox, you always figure them the second team at bat. Start of the 8th inning. Willard is batting for Bryant. Right-handed hitter steps up there to the plate. And Stratton's first pitch is inside and low for ball 1. 1 ball called. Bonnie winds up again, throws, and the hitter takes a strike over the inside corner waist high. And the count is 1 ball and 1 strike on Lillard. 1-1 the count. Ball 2, a curve ball very wide and low, runs the count 2-1. 2 balls and 1 strike. Bryant gets the sign again, winds up, throws, and Gene swings it, a slow bounder down the third baseline. Dyke comes in nicely and fires the ball across the infield with Benura digging it out of the dirt and hanging onto it for the first out in the 8th inning. 1 out in the 8th inning for the Cubs. And Augie Galland, leadoff man and center fielder, steps up there to the plate. Galland is back. One of the warm-up balls in the Sox bullpen somehow or other got clear off the back of some shortstop position in left field, so they had to call time while Happling went back to get it and throw it over to the warm-up catcher there. Now Galland watches the first pitch come over the outside corner a little above the knees for strike 1. 1 strike to count. Winds up again, throws, and it's a slow one that slips inside and low for ball 1. Make the count 1 ball and 1 strike on Galland. 1-1 the count. throws once more, and Augie gets the ball too wide and low. So it's two balls and one strike. Two and one with the pitcher ready again. Waits out there for the sign. He has it. He's winding up. Throws, and Augie gets the third ball wide. And it's three balls and one strike on Galan. Three and one. Starting winding up. Throws again, and Augie gets the second strike. It's over the outside corner, waist high. And Augie, who made the usual start first, comes back to the plate. Three and one. Three and two, rather. And Galan swings at an easy powder out to Hayes, who gets it on the second hop, throws the first, and Augie is out for the second out of the eighth inning. Two out in the eighth inning for the Cubs, and Cavaretta is up there to play. Cavaretta swings and drives the ball into center field for another base hit. His second hit of the game, and it puts Phil on first base with two out in the eighth inning, and Woody English up there. Woody, who replaced Billy Herman after Herman was hit in the right arm or wrist with a pitch ball. Throws the first one, and Woody gets a good strike. It's over the heart of the plate, a little above the knee. One strike on English. Ready once more, throws, and Woody takes a wide one. The catcher throws the ball to first, but Cavaretta went back standing up, beating a throw. He was all ready to slide, but he saw that Sewell's throw was a little bit low and outside the bag, so he came in standing up. It's one and one, one ball and one strike on English. And he hits the next for a high foul down the right field line and back into the stands. Cavaretta was around second base, but he turns and strolls back to first. Quite a scramble for that ball down there in the stands. One and two to count, one ball and two strikes. And Woody started for the next one, but stopped and pulled back to take it inside across the waist for the second ball. And makes it two balls and two strikes on Woody English. The bat for the Cubs in the eighth inning with two out. Cavaretta on first base. White Sox leading 11-1. Stratton ready again, throws, and it's ball three high and inside. Run the count to 3-2 on Ellie. Three balls and two strikes. Stratton rubs the ball up a little bit, then walks back onto the rubber. He's ready to pitch once more. With a runner on the go on the 3-2 count, the hitter hits another foul. One of the fans missed the ball over there, and it bounded out of his hand, started bounding along the front, just under the railing. Just before it dropped over, some other fan managed to grab it and keep it upstairs. 3-2 is the count. It's ready again. Throws, and English hits a high fly to right field. Hart is going back under it, still going back, and grabs it and hit his glove and bounds over against the stand. English pulls up at second base, and Cavaretta is scoring. And it's a long two-base hit to the base of the hole in right field. Hart seemed undecided for a moment, and then when he did start going back, as hard as he could go, he couldn't quite reach it, and it hit his glove. So a real long point from Everett, George. That's the moment, isn't it?
No.
That's the thing. Don't you open the door, I can tell which one it was.
Giving us the whistle, as usual.
And now Demery at bat takes the first one for a strike over the outside corner about knee high. One strike count. Score now 11-2 in favor of the White Sox. English on second base, two out, one run home, and Demery takes the ball wide, and the count is 1-1. One ball and one strike on Demery. Stratton swings around, ready once more, throws, and Frank hits a pop fly out back of Appling. Lucas back in the grass calling for the ball. He has it, and it's three out in the eighth inning. One run, two hits, one man left on base. In the first half of the eighth inning, four to come. And going into the last half of the eighth, the score is 11-2 in favor of the White Sox. Charlie Root, veteran right-hander of the Cubs, is walking in to resume the pitching chores, and Charlie Grimm is waiting out there. Charlie gets a hand from the fans and feeds them out. Good warm-up out there. With Appling standing over here with his hand on his hip and leaning on the bat watching him, he'll be the first man facing. This is by far not Charlie Root's first City Series game. Charlie finishes the warm-up and Luke steps up there to the plate. Appling and Pratt start the last half of the eighth inning. Starts to wind up, throws, and Luke jumps back to take a ball inside and low for ball one. One ball call. Winding up again, pitches. Appling hits an easy bounder right back at Root, who gets it, throws to first, and Appling is out for the first out in the eighth inning. One out in the eighth inning for the White Sox, and Jackie Hayes is at bat. Winds up and throws, and Jackie swings it a high fly out into center field, and Galan racing in makes the catch for the second out. He had to go pretty well over toward right center to make that catch on the run, and it's two out in the eighth inning with Jimmy Dykes now at bat. Gets the sign, starts to wind up, throws, and Dyke swings and misses a curveball for strike one. One strike on Jim. One strike to count, but you're ready out there once more. Takes the time, gets the sign, starts to wind up, throws, and it's a wide one across the waist for a ball, making it one strike on Dyke. And there's a strike over the heart of the plate, waste time, making it 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Jim. 1-2 the count. And the hitter swings the next one. The hitter slow bounded on the third baseline. Hack comes in, makes a one-handed pickup, throws the first, and as Cavaretta dug the ball up and in front of the runner, Jimmy almost knocked him over, and he beats it out for a base hit. Dykes is on first base, two out in the eighth inning, and Sewell is at bat. He takes the first one for a ball, and Root walks back onto the mound again. And the hitter hits the next one, a drive in the center field, but Galan is waiting for it out there, has it. And it's three out, ending the eighth inning with no runs, one hit, and one man left on base for the White Sox. And at the end of the eighth inning, the White Sox are leading the Cubs by a score of 11-2. Sutton's out there now, getting ready to pitch the ninth inning, which should be the last half inning, judging the way things are going and the way he's been going, which is in good shape. Thank you.
somebody down here. One of the doctors got to get in touch with some of the office department. Here's Stanley Hackenbatt to start the ninth inning for the Cubs. Stratton stands there getting his sign. Throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate, about knee high. One strike on Hack. And there's a ball inside and low. So the count is one ball and one strike on Stan. One and one the count. And he swings again, a foul one into the stand to the left of the plate. One ball and two strikes on Hack. One and two the count. Stratton winding up, throws again, and Hack takes a high one wide for ball two. And it makes it two balls and two strikes on Stan. 2-2 is the count. And a hitter hits the next one and bounded back over the pitcher's head. It goes through into center field for a base hit. Single to center field by Hack, putting him on first base to open the ninth inning and bringing Ken O'Day, who has taken over the catching chores. Then Tardet gave way to a pinch runner in the seventh. Ken O'Day at bat. Stratton ready, throws the first one, and O'Day takes a curveball inside and low for ball one. One ball called. Throws the next one, and Ken swings it. A bounder down to Hayes, who gets it, throws to second base. Appling throw to first. It's too late to get the runner there. And Hack is forced at second to play, going Hayes to Appling for the first out in the ninth inning, leaving O'Day on first base with one out. And Johnny Gill is at bat. Gill up there at the plate. Gill at bat, but you're ready out there again. And the hitter swings the foul this one into the stand above and to the left of the plate. And it's one strike. One strike on Gill. It's ready out there once more. Throws, and Johnny fouls this one back onto the net back of the plate. Count breaks the count with the pitcher waiting out there again. Johnny swings around to get his sign. Throws. And it's a ball that gets away from Sewell, bounds out to the right, but not far enough to let the runner advance. And so it's one and two still, strike. O'Day is on first base with one out of the ninth inning for the Cubs. White Sox leading 11-2. Schifani has each side again, takes another look at first, and throws, and a hitter hits the ball hard into right field for a base hit. O'Day makes the turn at second, keeps right on for third. Hoss gets the ball and throws it in to second base. Single to right field by Gill. His second hit of the game. Moving O'Day to third. And bringing Bill Jurgis to bat. Jurgis up there at the plate. Jurgis, the line foul into the spot seats down just beyond the Cub dugout back at first base. Apparently everybody got out of the way of it before that ball went in there like a bullet. And it's one strike. And a hitter hits the next one, a drive in the center field for a good clean base hit. One run is in, and Gill keeps right on and pulls up at third base. Single to center field by Jurgis, and currently Charlie Grimm is going to bat now in place of Charlie Root. Jurgis single to center, scores O'Day. He comes third run of the game, making it 11-3. And Grimm is getting a hand from the fans as he walks out of the dugout. Some fans were letting their rabidness, getting a little bit the better of their sporting spirit, are uttering a few boos, and there's no need for such a thing. Grimm is up there batting now in place of Charlie Root. Cub runners on first and third. And he hits the first one, an easy bounder back at Stratton, who gets it, throws hard to
Second base is throw to first. Makes a double play, and the game is over. Bernard comes running in, throwing the ball into the air, and tearing for the bench, and it's a double play. The play going from Stratton to Appling to Benora for the second and third out, ending the ninth inning, and the Sox win 11-2. In the ninth, Cubs had one run, three hits, one man left on base. And the total for the ball game, White Sox had 11 runs, nine hits, no errors. We have, let's see, one, two, three, nine men left on the base here. The Cubs had three runs. Let's see, they had two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, 10 hits and four errors with six men left on the bases. The time of the game, an hour and 58 minutes. The winning pitcher was Stratton and the losing pitcher was Warnicki. The totals again, giving the White Sox two games to nothing lead in the City Series. White Sox had 11 runs, 9 hits, no errors, with 9 men left on the bases. Cubs had 3 runs, 10 hits, 4 errors, and 6 men left on the bases. Time of the game, 1 hour and 58 minutes. The winning pitcher was Stratton. The losing pitcher, Warnicki. Tomorrow, the same two teams play here at Comiskey Park. Also on Sunday, in the third and fourth games of the City Series. We won't be on the air with it tomorrow, will we, George? Because it seems that we got a little football to be out, to do out to that good old Northwestern. You'll be comforting my old pal Dick Hanley, and in the next booth I'll be bearing down on one of our other stations. So, I mean, we'll have a lot of fun out there. But that concludes this broadcast. Tom DeMona is a little bit late today, but he got his whistle in just in time to get on the air. So, the final score today, 11-3. That means that the White Sox have won two games in a row, and tomorrow they're going to try to make it three, while the Cubs have really got to come back tomorrow and do something. Fourth game on Sunday. We will be with you then, won't we? Okay, games at 2 o'clock tomorrow and Sunday, but that's all for now. So Hal Cotton is speaking for George, old Uncle George and his pipe here, trying to bid you good afternoon from Comiskey Park and return to the studio. Bye now.
WCFL in Chicago. Men, you'll save money by...
Al Cotton presents... Great and other rest to eat cereals presents... Al Cotton. When you eat a bowl of Kellogg's cornflakes, millions of other people are also enjoying them. The Kellogg Company of Battle Creek, Michigan... By only the best of ingredients. Their products are manufactured in the spick and span plant, and they're packed in the big, bright red and green packages with the patented inner wax pipe wrapper. Made fresh and kept fresh. Kellogg's cornflakes have that Kellogg flavor, which has been famous since 1906, the year that the original cornflakes were introduced. They're toasted to a crispness that lasts. Try Kellogg's cornflakes for breakfast tomorrow. They are especially good with some preserved fruit or honey. And they're fine for that after-school lunch for the children. But when you go to your grocer's, always be sure. Never say cornflakes. Say Kellogg. And now, here's Hal Cotton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, tonight's the night the American Leaguers say, I told you so. All you American League fans get busy and chortle. Because... It was an American League day all the way down the line. Them there Yankees evened up the series with the Giants, and if there was any doubt about their evening it up, well, the score was 18-4. Of course, the last six of those eight runs were made in the ninth inning, but they were made. The Yankees had 18 runs, 17 hits, and no errors. For the Giants, 4 runs, 5 hits, and 1 error. The batteries for the Yankees, Gomez and Dickey. For the Giants, Schumacher, Smith, Kaufman, Gabler, Gumbert, and Mancuso. Here in Chicago, the White Sox made it to 2 straight over the Cubs, winning also very decisively 11-3. The White Sox had 11 runs, 9 hits, no errors. The Cubs, 3 runs, 10 hits, and four errors. The batteries for the White Sox, Stratton and Sewell. For the Cubs, Warnke, Henshaw, Bryant, Root, and Hartnett for Day. I don't know just what to say about those things. And yet, I guess I do. That Yankee game down there in New York, when the Yankee power really started to turn down the heat, more or less, I should say, emphasized the fact that the Giants are really, in this series, one Carl Hopper. It's pretty hard to say at any time that a ball club is no stronger than any one man. But if Schumacher can't do it, and Smith couldn't stop them, then I don't know what they can expect in a case like this. For the simple reason that now Hubble has almost certainly got to come back tomorrow. There's a good chance he won't, that's true. There's a good chance somebody else should. He's a pretty good... But if Fitzsimmons pitches tomorrow, great cat, if these Yankees turned on the heat today, he might very easily lose. Then Hubble comes back with a full three-day rest, and they can't very well use him again in the series. If Hubble tomorrow, with two full days of rest, and here sometimes in a very down situation like this, you can do that, and although you'll find Hubble and others even doing it through the season, then if Fitzsimmons might come back and do it, somebody else, maybe Schumacher, and between the two of them win one game, then Hubble gets another crack at him after two more days' rest, and they might be back in there. You can't ever tell. So it looks as though it's on Hubble's shoulders and practically no one else. Here in Chicago, the collapse of the Cubs' defense has been probably even more startling than the collapse of the Cubs' much-heralded pitching staff. Because the pitching staff certainly hasn't held up, and yet, in yesterday's game in which Lee lost, the defense collapsed to start him on his way, and in today, the very first inning, the defense collapsed, and then the big eight-run sixth inning, the defense was also very poor. The Cubs coming up with four errors today, two in that inning, to make it just too bad. And in the first inning, it did. But when those White Sox hitters started to take cracks at Warnke in the sixth inning, there was no known as two of the most dangerous hitting teams in the American League, find this National League pitching not so very difficult after all. Although, as I said, this is to be seen in the composite box scores of the two games play Yankee composite box score first. You find the Yankees as a team hitting .329 in two games, while the Giants as a team are hitting only .231. The strange part of it is, fellows in health, fellows who have made hits in eight, three hits in eight, hitting .364, hits in nine, hitting .444. Ott with two hits and six trips is .333. Mancuso with two hits and five trips is .400. And Jackson is the only regular under .300, and he has one hit in eight times at bat with .125. I mean by that the only regular who has made a hit. Hubble himself has a batting average of .500 with his two hits and four times at bat. And Davison, there's a pinch hitter today, made a hit to have a batting average of 1,000. But Moore has been held hitless in 10 times at bat. Lieber in 4, Ripple in 2, and Whitehead in 7. Now, compare that to the fact that the Yankees find only one man who is engaged in either of these two games that hasn't made at least one hit. And that is Charlie Ruffing, the pitcher who pitched the opening game of the series and was shut out in three times at bat. In fact, he struck out two of those three times. So everybody in the lineup, including Gomez, the pitcher today, has had something to do in the batting line. Now, when you have the hitting running all the way up and down the line that way, it's pretty tough. The most sensational showing at bat so far in the World Series is Jake Powell, fellow who really wasn't figured so seriously at the start. As a matter of fact, some people weren't sure that he would be regularly in there, although it was practically certain. But Powell, a boy who came from Washington in the deal for Ben Chapman this year, is hitting .714, just a mere .714. He's made five hits and seven times at bat and has gained a couple of walks. Other sensational averages, Rolfe has three hits and seven times at bat, and Frank and Joe have four in nine times at bat. Other fellows are all below .300. And that leads me to say another thing. Two of the biggest guns of the Yankee attack have been held below 300. And they're not going to stay there, at least one of them. So, in other words, they've won this one game to even it up. Without the really serious services of Lou Gehrig, who has made two hits in 8 times at bat, and Dickey, who has made 2 in 9 times at bat, that they're almost bound to get before the series is over. The big shot today, of course, was Lazeri, whose lone hit of the series, giving him an average of 143, happened to be a home run with the bases full, which is a lot of home run in any league. Gomez came up with a base hit, and so he's very happy tonight. The White Sox Cubs series, we find not quite as striking a situation, but still bad enough. The White Sox are hitting .231 as a team, with Appling topping the list, or rather tied with Rosenthal at the top of the list, with 4 hits and 8 times at bat. Each of them has a 2 base hit. Dykes is third with 2 hits and 6 times at bat, with .333 average, and all the rest of them are under 300. Stratton, the pitcher, made a hit today to have an average of .250. Canora has 1 hit and 6 trips with .167. Radcliffe, 1 hit and 7 trips with .143. And Hayes and Sewell each have 1 hit and 8 times at bat with .125. So, their hitting hasn't been overpowering, but the Cubs pitching has been so bad, and their defense so bad, their 5 errors in 2 games and 12 passes in 2 games, they're giving the Sox an opportunity which they haven't overlooked. The Cubs batting average is only .209 as a team, which is not very good. The Giants, incidentally, are hitting .231 as a team, which ties the present White Sox. The leader of the Cubs is Woody English, who has made 1 hit in his only appearance for a perfect average. But of those who have been in the game, in both games, Gill, making 4 hits and 8 times at bat, has an average of .500. Hack, with 2 hits and 6 trips, has .333. Hartnett, with 2 hits and 7 trips, .286. Cavaretta, with 2 hits and 8 trips, .250. And then on down, Demery has only 1 hit and 7 tries. Galan and Jurgis, 1 and 8. And the rest of them haven't hit. So you find the same weakness in the Cub team that the Giants are showing, and the same strength in the Sox team that the Yanks are showing, and that is that everybody put in here has had something to do. Only 2 of the White Sox players haven't made at least 1 hit. Haas, who has been up 6 times, and Kennedy, the pitcher, who was up 4 times yesterday. Whereas, of the Cubs, Herman, Warnke, Lillard, O'Day, Grimm, Lee, and Carlton, who have been at bat anywhere from 1 to 5 times, haven't made a base hit. Before we go any farther, I do want to remind you of one thing. And that is, remember what we said last night. The baseball player who won the Kellogg's Most Valuable Player contest will be announced Monday night, the winner of the player winning the Pontiac sedan. And then, if possible, Monday night, or if they haven't been able to figure through all the letters by that time, at least within the next 2 or 3 days after Monday, the main prize winners of the fans who wrote in will be announced. And also, every single person who voted in the contest is going to receive by mail a complete list of all the prize winners. If you know how many thousand that involved, it would give you a big kick. The scoring today started in the very first inning here at Comiskey Park. Radcliffe, the leadoff man for the Sox, walked and went to second on Rosenthal's single. Haas laid down a bunt toward third base, and Warnke went over there and got it in with plenty of time to get Radcliffe at third base. He'd have had him by 8 feet, but he had one of those things happen like Cavaretta did yesterday and threw the ball clear down to the canvas down the left field line, with the result that both Radcliffe and Rosenthal were able to score, and Haas reached third. Warnke looked like himself in striking out Benora and making Appling hit a ball toward Herman, but it was hit a little to Billy's right, rather hard hit, and caromed off Herman's glove for a scratch double, putting Haas across the plate. The Cubs got one of those back in the second inning with one out when Hack walked, went to second on Hartnett's scratch hit, and scored on Gill's single. The big blow-up, however, came in the sixth inning, and after pitching great ball, allowing only 1 hit after the first inning, and that coming in the fifth, why, Warnke really was tagged, and tagged plenty. Benora opened the inning with a resounding single to center. Appling singled to right, putting Benora on second. Hayes sacrificed the boys along. Dykes was purposely passed, filling the bases. Sewell singled to center, as he so often does in a clinch, scoring Benora and Appling to third. And then when the throw-in got away from Hack, Stratton went to second.
pitch after he'd won, and play which much a hard hit on the high plate. Ball got away from Cavaret. He's trying to throw to Phil at first, but still gets pushing. Another run with the hot horses. New pitcher came in, and then Appling singled the drive to end that big run. One in the eighth, when second time, an English dog, English set, opened with a single, but was forced to rather by O'Day, who was then in there. O'Day went to third on Gill's single and scored on Jurgis' hit. That's all, though, and tomorrow they play the third game of the series. But, Fort, you got something to say?
You know, people often say the way to jollity and value is to look for the... We invite you to invite us, as sure things, as a patented feature that makes it keep going outside parking. Just a zip of your thumb and press door up off the lid. Inside, nothing to protect the flavor and freshness of the face. The wax tights are found only on Kellogg products. Open that. Then notice how uniform those delicious toasted, but how perfect each one is. How wonderfully fresh and good they smell. Think perhaps, but they mean careful manufacturing and hot. The next time you buy a corn cake, get Kellogg and discover. Kellogg presents Hal Totten with his inside story on baseball each day at this time except Sunday. The National Broadcasting Company, WENR, the voice of service in Chicago. At this time, we leave the air in favor of WLS.